Last time I was in the middle of this sort of rather technical discussion about log structures. If you haven't understood anything I did last time, the intuition is that the log schemes we think about are things that somehow are equipped with maps locally, equipped with maps to a toric variety, affine toric variety, so X locally has a map X to spec. Well, we should be working over the integer, so I spec Z bracket Q, but really we're going to be usually working over a field, where P is some monoid. And we don't really care about the precise details of this map. It's not that the map itself is fixed, because, of course, you have this torus action here, and you can change this map in any way you want, as long as it's just changed by the torus action. That's how I like to think about these things. Is you have maps to toric varieties up to the action of the big torus. And if you're a stacky person, you would recognize that as a map to the stack. You don't need to understand this, but if you are a stacky person, you might understand this statement, which says that actually giving a log structure on X with a chart P is the same as giving a map like this. Anyway, don't worry about that if you don't know what this means. Some people are happier with the definition of this as the definition of log structure, as that is a morphism that at all locally you have a morphism to things like this. Since I sort of came to stacks much later than log schemes, I don't like to think of it like this. Okay, so then I talked about log smoothness, and the point is that we have this model for log smoothness. We have kind of this basic model for what a log smooth morphism should look like. It should look like, if you ignore the left-hand side, it should look like a morphism between toric varieties defined by a map of monoids. So that's really a toric map. And then there were a couple of technical conditions about the...
Who prefer this definition? I'm not one of them. But then the global thing was this thing, that was that art and scheme-y thing? Or
that so saying something is log smooth?
Or just a...
You can say that X to Y is log smooth if X is smooth over the classifying stack of log structures, log schemes over Y.
Let it go.
Exactly.
Is there a characterization in terms of local freeness of modules of log?
So there is it's slightly subtler than that, unfortunately. There's an extra condition. So one way to develop the subject at this point would be start to talk about modules of log differentials. So this is something I didn't mention, but where did this whole subject get its start? Maybe I should just, it's Friday afternoon, I'll just bullshit a bit. I'm picking up Sean's habits here of language, but...
And that's not my habit.
The origins of log geometry were in the discussions. Let me just have this as a little aside here. When you have a normal crossings divisor, D contained in a variety X, say D locally defined by some equation of the form x1 through xn is equal to 0, then it was traditional to talk about logarithmic differentials. So you talk about d log xi, which is, of course, dxi over xi. So that's not quite an ordinary differential because there's a pole along xi equals 0. But what you do is you specify, you say, okay, we're going to allow these meromorphic differentials of the pole, as long as they only appear in this way, dxi over xi. I'm not allowed dxj over xi, so it's only things of the form d log. And then one of the great things, for example, is that this defines sort of the sheaf of log differentials, so what's often written omega 1 log d. And then you can use the Durham complex for these differentials, and the cohomology of the Durham complex, I'll just write that as hypercohomology of x omega dot log d. So if you didn't have this log d here, you'd be computing the ordinary Durham cohomology of x, and this is actually the cohomology, it's isomorphic, the cohomology of x minus d coefficients in C, if we're working over the in the analytic topology. No, no. So this was something that Australia was known quite some time before before log structures were invented. And this was great for example, trying to get Hodge structures on non-compact, non-projective varieties. So it was crucial in Deween's work on Hodge, on mixed Hodge theory. So the idea was to generalize this, was to that Mx should be viewed as something that you, elements you're allowed to take d log of. And so there's a way to define log differentials. I'm not going to write down the definition, but once you have log differentials and relative differentials, then indeed you those things will be locally free sheaves whenever the morphism is smooth. The converse, unfortunately, isn't quite true. You have other things you have to check, too. You have to check, still have some kind of local properties to check. Okay, so that's kind of a recap of what we talked about last time. So, again, you know, forgetting all the very technical details, slogan, the log structures we're interested in are really just local maps into toric varieties, log smooth morphisms locally are modeled on toric maps, just as an ordinary smooth morphism is modeled on sort of projection AN to A, you know, AN cross X to X. Okay. There's one other thing which actually I should have done and I planned to do before talking about log smoothness. And so this is another example. And this is discussing the kind of information encoded in a log morphism. So we, you know, I define log morphism, but I didn't really say that much about them. And so we have this this thing which I write as spec K dagger. This was the standard log point. And just to recap, this is spec K with a so point with this sheaf of monoids attached to it, and the structure map was given by S. N goes to S times 0 to the N, again interpreting 0 to the 0 as 1. So that was the standard log point. And then we'll take the affine plane, say, with the divisorial log structure coming from the coordinate axis. So let's take this to be X. And let's try to understand log morphisms from this to this. So and we're going to get some hint that there's kind of a lot of information hiding in here. This is related to the question asked last time, is can I view spec K dagger as kind of a tangent vector? In fact, there's more information there. Okay, well, the first thing you have to specify, of course, is where the point goes. This is a scheme theoretic map, so let's make life interesting. What's the most interesting point? It's the origin. So assume image is the origin. Okay, so now we have to talk about what pullback is on the level. So we need a map F flat from the pullback of Mx, so that's going to be the stock of Mx at the origin, to Mk dagger, that's K star plus N. We need a map like this. pullback of the, on the level of the monoids, and it has to be compatible with well, the structure maps. Okay, so this map is well, this is a sub, right? This is actually a subset of this, because this is defined by a set of functions which are invertible outside of the coordinate axes. And this map I've written down over there, this map is evaluation that takes a function phi to phi of 0. Okay, so we need a commutative diagram like this. So I can split this, if I want, I can split this as, by choosing some coordinates, say x and y, as I've already done, I can split this as O x 0 star, so invertible functions, plus n, plus n. Okay, so here, phi ab corresponds to phi times x to the a times y to the b. Okay, so in fact, you can always split these stars in terms of O star and M bar. So now I have to define a map like this. And we know one thing. We know what's happening to OX0 star because of the commutativity of this diagram. That has to be evaluation. So phi, so F flat, should do what? Should take phi AB to something. At the very least, it should take phi of 0. Phi 0, 0 should go to phi of 0, 0, because it's such a monoid homomorphism. But there will also be some function g, so g AB, and then maybe I'll write as h of AB, where G is a map from n squared to k star, and H is a map from n squared to n. Okay, so that's, I've just written down the completely general map from here to here, with the only restriction I'm using so far is commutativity of this diagram. That tells me what happens to things here. Okay, but it doesn't tell us much about G or H. So G, you know, you can think of this as G is really an element then of K star squared. You're specifying two elements of K star, where 1, 0, and 0, 1 go. Now this is kind of a bit more interesting. This is purely combinatorial information. Now the one thing, there's only one restriction to this data. So what I've just written down is the general map. There's one further restriction, which is that we can say something about this map. So this corresponds to an element H. Well, I can just write it as an element of Hom n squared n. That's a tautology, which I want to write also as n squared. And the one restriction is that this has to lie in what we call the interior of this monoid. So this is, of course, the integral points in the first quadrant. And so something's in the interior if it lies here rather than here, here, or here. So let me show you that one restriction. So note, to get commutativity, so let's look at what happens to an AB. So one AB maps under this map to G of AB, that's just some number, then H of AB. And this maps if AB lies in the, what do I want to say? Hold on, let me just finish the diagram. So this maps to X to the A, Y to the B, which then maps to 0 if A and B are both greater than 0. If A and B are non-zero. If AB is not equal to 0, 0, is what I mean to say, and maps to 1 if AB is equal to 0, 0. Okay, so that's going around that way. What about this way? This maps to G of AB times
zero to the
H, right, zero to H AB. Right, so that means that HAB better be non-zero, provided that AB is non-zero. So that's a restriction on H, and in particular it means H lies in the interior of this dual monoid, i.e. H lies in the interior of N squared. Okay, so once we have that, then of course you can see that G of AB doesn't play any role, because as long as AB is non-zero, this is to zero anyway, and if AB is zero, so that this maps to zero, G of AB is one, so we get equality. So this is the only constraint. Okay, so the conclusion is giving a morphism spec K dagger to A2 with image 0 equivalent to giving a So, morally, this n squared is dual to the original n squared. And so you can think of, if you're used to toric geometry, you should think of, when you dualize, you should think of that as having to do with the fan. These are the integral points of the fan defining A2. The fan defining A2 is the first quadrant. And this represents the integral points. Dualizing that gets you the monoid. And so the way to think about this is then is that you have the n squared here. This is the dual. Let me write this column just to be precise. This is the n squared, which is the dual of the original monoid. We're choosing some point in the interior. So, one way to think about that is that you are subdividing that cone. That's doing the toric blow up of A2 and producing some toric divide. And then, this k star squared, if this was k star, you could then view that as a point on the exceptional curve. So you're doing blow up, like that. And then, if you don't allow your point to be here, you just have a k star. And you're choosing a point on that k star. Now, actually, we have an extra parameter, which I'm not going to explain. It's not too hard to explain. Do this blob in A2 cross A1, and then you'll have the answer. But more or less, the way to think about this choice of point is choosing a blow-up, a weighted blow-up at the origin, and choosing a point on that exceptional cluster, which is away from the other clusters.
And if we took really mod the torus acting on A2, would it just be the picking of the divisor then?
So there's a lot of information. So at one level, you can kind of think of this as a tangent vector, because a point on an exceptional divisor is a tangent vector up to scale. But it's really more information that it can choose which weighted blow-up we're doing.
complicated information. Okay, so any questions about that? So the moral is log morphisms can hide a lot of interesting data.
This is a morphism to A2 if it's Z of X, Y.
That's right.
Obviously, the bigger that the divisor is, the more stuff you have there, the more information.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah, so having a way to think about this information and find what information is hiding there is going to be very important.
How close is K-Dagger? Can we think of it as something like a formal disk with a zero point as the divisor?
Yeah, so in some sense, it's... yeah, so if you thought of a formal disk coming into the origin, then come in some way, maybe horribly tangent to the two branches, and that would tell you how you're supposed to blow up the origin in order to resolve that so the disk only intersects the divisor.
So is it actually equivalent? If I take that formal log scheme or something like that, is K-Dagger the same thing as
Not quite. You would have a lot of moduli as to how you goes on away from the origin. So it's recording the tangency data of that little formal thing.
All the information with respect to this device. More than either you have more information to recover.
That's right.
So for example, what if you replace X, Y with higher genes curves intersecting, and you only care about mapping to a particular point of intersection.
Yeah, so then you still, well, low wave just look torque. I mean, assuming they're crossing normally.
Yeah.
You just sort of see the same picture of low wave. There wouldn't be any global information for any curves. But of course, once you move away from intersection points, you'll still see, of course, interesting things happening still at every point. Imagine to analyze the situation where we go to one of the away from the origin, but into the boundary divisor. There's still interesting information, but now it's mapped end to end. And that's the kind of recording, as we'll see later, is kind of recording, if you think in terms of this formal arc, it's recording the order of tangent symbols with the branch. Okay, so that's.
Basically, we can have any order of tendency along each of
them. So we have that here, too. That's like primitivity of this. Isn't that correct? We also have like an order of tangency with it.
Right? That's right, yeah. It's more than just the divisor, but we're still, when we take a proper transform of this little arc, then we'll have some order of tangency.
You can have any order of tangency. If you have like a bunch of divisors, you can have any order of tangency on any of them, right?
Yeah.
But that would be true for... formal disk into there, right? It couldn't be tended to multiple lines.
Well, the thing is that if we say we have a single point which is with tangency here and here, well, you have a better map into the single point into the origin.
Right, now if we have a jet, this is back of k brackets, it's only going to be moving in along parallel to one line at a time. Right?
No, you can get, right? So, the point is that something like t goes to t. So for some of the origin, and then this AB.
Okay.
So it's remembering this way.
But I mean, you could have one and two. You could have like a bunch of lines.
You mean sort of different lines.
Like if we have like n lines going to the origin.
One issue here is that this is no longer log smooth, which means that sort of some formal lifting isn't going to necessarily work, which is probably exactly the issue here. Right, so the log smoothness would say, this case we're at the point, the same. If we take the thickening of the point, we can extend.
I see.
So here, of course, you still have, of course, if you have, say, four complements, you have an end to the fourth, because these are all Cartesian laws, just good functions that with any zero vanishing one. So the log point could specify what is the tangency of any sort we want. But there's no guarantee it extends to formal arc.
Right. Let's see.
And if it can't extend, that means log smooth.
Right. just in general, it's not smooth, this bottom point should extend to the four. Yeah, so I think what I said last time, I didn't write the definition down, but it's the formal lifting criterion.
Okay.
If you just sort of look up the definition of formal smoothness in your favorite source and put the word log everywhere, that's the definition of log smoothness. And then it's a theorem that the characterization I gave is actually the correct characterization. But of course, in practice, it's good to see the characterization. Okay, so now let's move on and get closer to the punchline of this series of talks, and let's talk about log smooth curves. So we'll consider. So I'm now essentially returning to the situation in the first lecture where I talked about flat families of curves. Eventually, they'll map into those curves will map into another variety. But let's first focus on a family of curves. So I haven't underlined them, so I mean this is a log scheme. So this is a log morphism. I want to impose certain conditions. Proper flat. Now you might, again, those of you who are comfortable with smoothness, notice that smooth morphisms are always flat. That's not true in the log world. A blow-up is a tuple. This map here from this blown-up A2 down to A2 is a tuple. So I have to put the flatness in by hand. And with all fibers, reduced curves. So I also have to put reduced in by hand. And why is that? If you go think of the think of my model for a log smooth map. You go spec k bracket n squared, so I have my plane then spec k bracket n, and my mind, a2 to a1. This is log smooth as long as it's a monomial map, so it could be something like x, y goes to x, the a bracket b, which if a or b is not bigger than 1, it's not reduced. So the formalism allows even non-reduced things.
Just fiber just mean fiber of the underlying scheme.
Underlying scheme, yeah. Some fibers.
If you took a point of W with its sort of restricted log structure and took the fiber in that sense, is that
it will be the same thing. Actually, it's not always. I've avoided talking about fiber products. It's a very subtle concept. We might eventually have to, I'm not sure. But I'm not doing it today. But yeah, so we can do this, take the fibers, you take a say a geometric point, pull back the log structure. That agrees. As long as the map, if you're trying to do a base change, as long as that map of log schemes is given by pullback, it's fine. Okay. Anyway, so this is the basic situation that I want to consider. And in particular, I want to do that now. So if W, I want to classify what happens if W is just spectral field, and now with log structure, just a generalization of the standard log point, because I want to allow an arbitrary torque monoid. And the structure map is still the same, so k star plus So the way to think about this is a point that knows it's the zero-dimensional orbit of this toric variety. So I'm going to analyze this situation. And this analysis is very important for all our future discussions. So I'm going to tell you exactly what this curve is. So first of all, C is a nodal curve. So we're only allowed to have we're allowed to have singularities, but it has to always look normal across it, x, y equals 0. And again, of course, that's what we expect from this kind of model, as long as we use the expected subback x, y equals 0. That this is not the general model, as we'll see. So that's the first thing, C is a nodal curve. Now let's introduce a bit more notation. Let's let q1 to qn be the nodes. Then there exists some finite set of additional points. And there exists non-singular points in C. Which I'll call, say, P1 through PS, say. So these will be some additional points away from the nodes. Q1, 2, P2, 3. Some additional points for something extra is going to happen. But away from all these points, so if C, let's call it C circ, equal to C minus this collection of nodes and other special points, so if we're away from these two types of points, then MC circ, the log structure, subset is just the pullback of log structure on W. Okay, so away from nodes and these finite set of additional points, nothing interesting happens. The log structure is just the pullback of the log structure on the base. There's no extra structure. So for future reference, for X and C circ, what is this, the stock of M bar? It's just the same as the stock of the pullback of M bar downstairs, and that's, of course, Q. Okay, so generally speaking, if you look at a general point here, X, the stock is Q. And that would be true particularly at the generic points. So, the irreducible components. Okay, so that's the first situation. Now I have to tell you something about the log structure at the special points PI. So at a point PI, the stock of the sheaf M bar, as I told you last time, I like to think about these log structures by thinking about M bar. They have a lot of combinatorial information. This will be Q plus M. We have just an extra factor of M. Now, that does not tell you what the log structure is. I just tell you a little bit of information. To give the log structure, I'll give you a description, a chart, so pre-log structure. The log structure. Q plus N goes to, as I take the constant sheet, Q plus N goes to OU. where T is a local parameter, so the coordinate in a neighborhood of P vanishing at P. So the way to think about this log structure is I have this garbage from the base, right? So this is forced on us. We're always forced to have this garbage from the base. Is when we have a map, we have this map from C to W, which is the logmorphism. That means we're supposed to get a map from M W to M C. Pullback. So you have to have garbage from the base. But there's something extra here, namely this factor of N, which doesn't come from the base. And what that really is it's a divisorial log structure. We're just saying, okay, we're going to allow stuff pulled back from base and functions which vanish at P. And we call these points marked points. So this is just combining two sorts of log structures, divisorial log structure and trivial one pulled back. Okay, and then we take a look at the nodes. Those are just the end of the story.
And the guy from downstairs, he doesn't go to N at all.
Right, that's right. Yeah. So the map from M W, so M bar W to M bar C P in this case is just the inclusion Q goes to.
Chart level, which just goes into Q.
That's right. So this N is just coming along the rod, doesn't interact with log points. Okay, so finally, at a node Q, M bar C Q. Now you may not like this, but I'll write it down anyway. Is a fibered sum of monomers. So when you have a fibered sum, you have to specify maps. This is not a fiber product, this is sums. The maps are going out this way. Maps. N to Q, this will be 1 goes to some rho Q in Q, and rho Q has to be non-zero. And then the map N to N squared is 1 goes to 1, 1. Now this, I don't expect it to absorb right away. I need to spend some time giving some intuition. What's this 5 with sum? So basically what this is going to be is you take Q plus N squared, and you have to be careful about this. I don't want to go into too much detail with this, but you have to divide out by the equivalence relation that rho Q 0 is equivalent to 0, 1, 1. So basically you're supposed to identify things in here and things in here if they come from down there. So of course you have to do that properly. If there was a group, you know what to do. You just take a group, subgroup generated by this minus this, and it's a bit simpler. Deal with monomers. Yes.
Is this a pullback or a push out?
Is it push out? Right. Okay, so, and let me finish tell you what the log structure is by writing down a chart, and then I'll try to give some intuition about what this means. So the chart will be from Q plus N. Squared. And locally, at tau local, I can describe the curve as spec of this, right? It's supposed to have a node, so spec k bracket x, y, mod x times y. This is again, at tau locally. This is OU. non-zero, if Q is non-zero, and X to A, Y to B, then Q is equal to zero. Okay, what does this mean? What this means is as a curve, as a node, which knows how it's smooth. It's a node sitting inside a family. This is the central fiber of a smoothing. Given by xy is equal to z to the rho q. Okay, so we have this monomial, which is a function here, it will vanish at the zero-dimensional stratum. It's all, insists that rho q be non-zero, so it's a non-constant monomial, hence better vanish at the zero stratum. So at the zero stratum, we get xy equals zero, but if you move into the interior, the big torus of this, you'll get x, y, something, non-zero. So you get a family which degenerates over some strata, the strata where this is zero, to the node. And the point is that what this log structure does is it tells us that it's sitting in that kind of thing. And again, here, let me just for completeness map m bar w to m bar cq. Q goes to q plus n squared. That's the obvious map, and q goes to q. Okay, any questions? This is the classification of curves over all. So,
is it difficult to prove?
I've never actually read the proof. This is, we always quote a paper of Fumihara Kato. That was that one. I think you just have to figure out what the, once you put enough restrictions, what the possible maps and monomials are.
I guess the parts that shouldn't be difficult, like, right, to see that the singular is their only nodes, I guess.
Right.
That should follow via the.
Yeah, and then I think you have to, I mean, once you place this restriction that the fibers are reducible, I mean, you're looking at maps, you know, monoid Q or P down to monoid Q of relative dimension 1, and then you have to classify the possibilities that will give some points. So it's probably boils down to some common sort. But as I said, I'm actually with.
So if I have a family of stable curves with a singular fiber, x, y equals t, and then I give it the divisorial log structure from that fiber and just the point downstairs, that's one of these?
Yeah, so...
And everything else is pulled back from that? Or?
Yeah, so I'm going to do this now or later. Let me return to that question later. But a very simple example. Let me actually do what I was meant to tie in the question. So here's an example. Let's take Q to be N. Then what are the possibilities for this monoid? So this understanding this monoid is always the difficult part of the story. So then we have N, so rho Q. Let's take to be some element E in N. So we have N plus N. This is generated by something which I'm going to call rho, which is 1, 0, 0. That's certainly in there. A, which is 0, 1, 0. those certainly generate, because they generate n plus n squared, and we're talking about a quotient. So we need a relation. And the way to figure out the relation is to look at a plus b. A plus b, of course, is 0, 1, 1, and that is equivalent to e, 0, 0, which is e, 0. Okay. So this is actually the monoid generated by rho a and b with one relation. We can prove that, it's not so hard. And that then corresponds to torque variety. So this gives you some kind of family of curves. For t non-zero, of course, you just get a smooth curve, and for t equals zero, the nodal curve. And the log structure on this is the divisorial log structure. Is the inverse of zero is the divisorial, is the torque boundary. So we get some picture where we have a migration like this over A1. The special fire is the torque boundary. So we have the log structure here, the monoid n here, and here, and then s here, rather than n squared, because we have a singularity. And what this SE is doing is seeing the fact that, and these aren't Cartesian bundles, so you can't find functions which vanish any order here. So that's a kind of picture. So the thing about it is that the nodes know how they're being seen. Okay, so that is the structure of log curves. And we're now ready to define a stable log map, the analog of stable, of a stable map, stable curve. From the first lecture, from traditional Gromov-Whittington. And at this point, it's easy. Definition. Let X be an FS log scheme. Stable log map. The diagram. So normally, I'm going to write it like this, C over W, P1, PN, F. Diagram, C is X, so that's F. We map from C to W, that's the family of curves of the sort we've just been talking about. And P1 through PN are sections. Where P1 through PN are sections describing all marked points. I'm not sure if this is the Sahin is, as we just saw, one of these log smooth curves. So this, of course, involved, this is the type of thing we just did. Studying log smooth curve. The point is that they can have sections which are marked points. It might be worse than sections. It might be multi-sections. It's just not each fiber you have a number of marked points. But we're going to insist that they all come from sections. So in other words, we can label the marked points. Does that make sense, or should I try? I can write out something that's very precise, but less easy to understand.
They're not allowed to.
Except that a priori, if I don't specify this, they could form an ad hoc cover of W.
Yeah.
Right? There could be some laundry. And so I want them to really describe sections. So we have these sections along which the block structure jumps. That's this extra n factor. Other than that, nothing else. Okay, and there's one condition.
That's a slightly confusing one to me. At least the places where C had that extra log structure.
That's right, yeah.
So should we think of the P's as the thing that's making that log structure, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because you can actually specify this. If I just specify sections, I can force there to, I can just add an extra bit of log structure.
Yeah, okay. I see what you mean. You can almost leave them off, because they're in the log structure C, but you're sort of saying that those things are actual sections.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can't really leave them off. I could, leave it out of the log structure. But it's very convenient to encode them.
Yeah.
And one of the morals of the story is this notion of log smooth encodes exactly what we want to do in Gnomon theory anyway. Sort of makes life look simpler. And there's one condition, so such that the underlying scheme theoretic diagram. Is a stable map. Now, this was a bit surprising to me when Berendt. I mean, there's a lot of history to this. I think I hinted in the first lecture, but Berendt Siebert had proposed this in 2001, pretty much around the time we just started working together. And then there was a lot of work done with relative growth with invariants, which we ignored at this point of view. Basically 10 years later that the logarithmic technology got to the point where we could actually do something with the idea. So it surprised me that you just imposed the stability condition at the underlying scheme. You're just decorating and you're enhancing stable map. But unfortunately there's a different complexity which again took me a very long time for Berendt to explain it to me, but I finally understood. Goal. Show there's a moduli stack. A nice moduli stack. For stable logarithms. So, of course, this is ultimately an immensely technical thing. I'm not going to prove to you that this is the case, that these things exist. But I do want to explain an extremely important obstruction to this. And I'll explain the obstruction now, and then I'll stop. The obstruction is extremely simple. So what does well-behaved mean? Well, first of all, it should be a Dewey-Mumford stack, so it should look like the scheme module of finite group. That really means you should only have finite automorphism groups. And secondly, once you fix some combinatorial data, like the homology class of the target curve, the genus, and the number of marked points, you should get a finite type proper set. The finite type is a huge problem. This moduli stack of these things is rather a nightmarish problem. Many stable log maps. So let me show you why there are too many. So let me draw this diagram out in a bit more detail. So C and C, I'm just drawing the, writing the sheet of the bottom of it. Leave some space there, and then we have a map of X and X. And then we have a map of C and, sorry, W and W. All right, so suppose we're given a stable log map. I can now give you an infinite number of new stable log maps. How do I do that? I just add on a trivial copy of n to the r up here, and a trivial copy of n to the r down here. Okay. My structure map just is the stupid one. It just sends all these things to zero, so it's not going to change anything interesting. The map from here to here, of course, just takes this copy to that copy. But this is perfectly kosher. It's just, you know, very crude modification of the log structure. And, of course, giving this log morphism meant that we already had a map into MC. Well, so of course, you know, compose that with inclusion to MC plus NR, we still have a log morphism. So adding this extra factor of NR is completely harmless in terms of the diagram, but this now gives you a countable number of log enhancements of the stable log map. And this is completely unavoidable. And this is just the stupidest thing you can do. So next time I will do two things. I will talk about the tropical interpretation of log geometry. And what this is a very convenient way to encode all the combinatorics. We keep on talking about n bar and the combinatorics of n bar. This will be a very convenient way to visualize that combinatorics. And I'll explain how we use that to solve this problem.
But I think, because I didn't get this at all the first time, say again, what it means to give a map of a scheme into this moduli space.
Yeah, so the idea is, so we want to show some nice small plus back. Yeah. So what is this, does that mean? It means, so just continuing from there, i.e., for any scheme W, W into M is equivalent to giving a diagram. C to X and M to W. Right, so this is an important point. I mean, this is what a classifying stack is supposed to do. Map from a scheme into M is supposed to give you an object that you're interested in classifying. Right, not a log scheme. That's a different, that would be a different theory, a scheme. So that includes, you know, for every one of these choices of log structure, I have a different map. And in fact, this would be mapped into a different connected complement of M. So M is, you know, even if you restrict to, restrict the cohomology class, you know, this is just a fixed underlying curve. You still get an infinite number of complements, connected complements. So we have to fix that by identifying some substack which might be reasonable and which will hopefully do something useful for us. So
I think that
so Martin Olson did that in his thesis. And that was kind of the interest, what we were waiting for to work on this problem.
What would be the meaning of the log structure on M?
So that's something that I have to answer at length in the next lecture. I can't explain.
I have a quick question, which is, so you gave this example of curves with nodes that know how they're being smooth. That's also the description that people often have said to me as far as what a tropical curve is. And so are those things the same?
Yes, yeah, so I'm going to explain next time how this information, like this SE, this number E, is encoded into the chart position.
Okay. But, is it correct to say that a tropical curve is equivalent to a log curve?
No, so I'm going to show you. So there's a tropicalization function.
Uh-huh.
So I guess you won't be here next time, so no. I'll answer in brief now. There's a tropicalization function which associates to any FS log scheme a polyjoule cone complex. And it's functorial, so if you apply this function to this diagram, you get sigma C, sigma W, and the fibers are what you would think of as tropical curves, so they're graphs where the edges and lengths. And then, of course, we also have the map of sigma of X, and that gives you the map for each one of those graphs.
When you tropicalize a normal curve, you use a lot of information about the moduli.
Absolutely right. So it's just purely combinatorial information. So you wouldn't necessarily expect to be able to reconstruct if the tropical picture reconstruct the actual curve. But the tropics do allow you to sort of restrict quite a lot about what kind of log curves exist. Because these tropical curves can satisfy certain balancing conditions.
This tropicalization function is defined on log schemes?
Yeah, but it can be defined on building on for log sets. Maybe part of the stack, but I think we'll probably want to do that.
So now you don't have the log structure on the hand yet.
That's right. So right now, I just said, well, okay, so there's a, if we want to find the moduli stack in the ideal world, and it will turn out to be the case, it comes. Well, first of all, I mean, so this stack exists. This is an algebraic stack, but nothing else. Actually, it's barely an algebraic stack. You have to throw out a few axes. But we're going to find a substack, open and closed substack, which is doing Mumford and carries a log structure. We can explain.
And this step without log structure, this has the independent connect components?
Yeah, this has no hope.
Maybe you can also underline these stacks.
So thank you, Mark, again.